Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guess what? The .NET Developer Days conference is happening October 18th and 19th in Warsaw with some great speakers and over 30 technical sessions spread over 2 days. Among them are keynotes by Scott Hunter and James Montemagno. If you can't make it to Warsaw in person, they also offer a great online option. For only 150 euros, you can access 2 days of live-streamed conference sessions as well as all the session recordings after the show. Check them out at developerdays.pl and take 20% off your online registration with the code ROCKS. That's R-O-C-K-S exclamation point.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to .NET Rocks. This is Carl Franklin.
And this is Richard Campbell.
It's been a while since we recorded, hasn't it?
It's conference season, you know? That gets a little dicey sometimes.
Yeah, you know what else it is? Barbecue season.
Oh, funny you should mention that. I have about 10 pounds of ribs sitting in the fridge to go into the smoker this afternoon.
Nice.
Block party time, right? Kind of end of the summer. And
yeah.
So the neighbors all want to get together.
I did a okay, so here's the story. I'm renovating my garage, the back half of my garage, into Pwop Studios 3.0.
Yay.
Yeah. So I've been across the street from the original location at the Guard from Theater.
State Street to Guard, and now you're going home.
Yeah. Well, the reason that I can't really use that space anymore is because, hey, guess what? Pandemic's over, so to speak, and they got busy again.
They got busy, yeah. Yeah, you were helping them out back in the day, and now they're back in full swing. I'd also say this. Your garage is massive. I remember.
It is massive.
Massive.
Yeah, so I'm taking the back half of it. And the reason I said that is because your barbecue reminded me of it. I had some guys in the band over to help me get trash out, move things down to the basement, right? We did
many
a whole
hands
day.
Make light work.
Yep, and these guys were great. And I want to shout out to Dave Caffro and Tom DeFaria and Rich Gill. They came over and they helped. And I made, not barbecue, but braised short rib tacos.
Very nice.
Very yeah.
Civilized.
It was a huge pile of meat.
Well, that's all anybody actually wants, right?
Yeah. It was great.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, let's get started with Better Know Framework.
All right, buddy. What do you got?
Well, it's a website that maybe you've heard of. It's called .NETRocks.com.
Never heard of it. No.
Yeah. Well, the .NETRocks.com needed not only a UI facelift, but a tech facelift as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went ahead and pulled the trigger, and it's a Blazor server application now.
Right.
And, you know, it's in my milieu. It's something I know and love and understand.
Sure.
As of this recording, the UI is still kind of Blazor-y and old techy and all that stuff.
Oh,
however,
yeah.
I hired a CSS guru, Daniel Heikenberg, who is in your part of the woods, Mr. Oh. Campbell. He's worked with me on a project for a customer, and he's just great. So he came up with some designs, and once we approve them, they're going in.
I mean, I will say the existing site, which, like you said, is very blazery, it's also responsive. Like, it does look – it is functional on a phone. And that's,
absolutely,
you know, harder than you think.
And the old one wasn't.
Yeah.
And plus, we don't have pop-ups now.
Yeah. Well, the old one was, I mean, Joe Hewlin has a great aesthetic eye, and it's a beautiful site and so forth.
Yeah.
And it was a spa, right? It was very hip for the time. It was also remarkably SEO resistant.
Yes.
Like, it has hurt us in the rankings that
Correct.
Use that engine. So
that's another reason why I wanted to use Blazor. And there's some ways that you can optimize for search engines, do SEO in a Blazor app. And I actually talked about that in Blazor Train. But here's the big challenge. There are two big challenges. Number one, PWOP.com also moved to the cloud, and that was what hosted our old feed.
Right.
Right? So I had to do a redirect on feed.aspx. We have a new podcast host. It's iHeartRadio, otherwise known as Spreaker.
Right.
And Spreaker has their own RSS feed. So that's basically where we're rerouting people to. However, that feed does not allow for tags. Because guess what? The tags are in our database.
Right. We invented them.
We invented those tags.
I mean, I also would appreciate you are finally retiring your hand-built RSS feed engine from like 2005, obviously
yes.
with updates, but you wrote that code a long time ago.
That's right. It's ASPX, and it was running in an Azure VM, right? So, and it right. was written, feed.aspx was written in VB.
Yes. So, I mean, it's a, and we've been talking about this for years, that the yeah. downside to being a 20-year-old podcast is scraping off the craft of 20 years.
Yeah.
Right, that you rolled your own for everything back in the day because there was no other choice.
Right.
And there are better engines now. Plus, RSS2 is screwed up these days. Like, look at the feed.
I know. It's like, terrible.
Apple has all their own tags. And if you don't have them, everything's broken in iTunes. Right?
Like, that's right.
It's nightmarish. I'd rather have somebody else take care of that.
And the feed validators are unreasonable. Like, I took a regular Spreaker feed. RSS feed, and I put it through the regular feed validator. It has all sorts of problems.
Yeah. I think the feed validators are out of date.
They are, yeah.
Yeah.
The real test is whether you can add your podcast by RSS to, you know, Apple Podcasts or whatever
right.
on your phone. And if it says it doesn't understand, then you got a problem, but it doesn't tell you much.
Right.
So anyway, this is the world that I've been living in for the last week. And I promise things will get better.
Yeah.
Another problem that we have is the old comments from Discus.
Yes, from Discus.
I'm using a great comment engine, and it basically, they have a way that they can import the exported comments from Discus. However, they don't like our exported XML file. And, it's just a problem of being .NET Rocks. We were one of the first podcasts ever. So, for example, Spreaker feed only gives you the last 1,000 shows. Oh, sorry. They didn't tell me that when I signed up.
Yeah. Seems like enough for most people, and it's only half for us.
Yeah. Right? So there's problem number one. Problem number two, these comments didn't import correctly. So I actually had to read that XML file and parse out the comments and just have them statically as archived comments. Yeah.
And of course, we're on Bullhorn today. We're streaming this.
Yes.
And so, of course, the first and foremost comment about this whole experience is search.
Yeah.
Because search is important. And right now, I think the search only works on titles, which is not enough. So search will improve.
Yes, search will improve. Everything will improve. The look, the feel, the speed. It will all improve. Just bear with us in this time of crisis.
Self-inflicted time of crisis.
Self-inflicted, but hopefully at the end, everything will get better.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I want to talk about today. Okay. Who's talking to us, Richard?
You know, we do not do enough accessibility shows, and in the end, this will be an accessibility show, although I'm very excited to talk to Courtney about her approaches and screen readers and this whole idea. But One of the folks we lean on occasionally for accessibility is a lady by the name of Elle Waters. And back a few years ago, we were talking about accessibility in UX. This is from 1469, which is 2017, really too long ago. I'm sure there's more accessibility shows since then. I just didn't put accessibility in the title. And one of those comments on that show was from Chris Love, one of our favorite, very conservative web developers. Yes. And I really appreciate Chris. Chris, I hope you hear this and know how much we adore you, because you really push us to be the best kind of web developers we possibly can.
In other words, the least amount of data as possible to make the right experience.
Oh, no. He's the guy who calls, you know, they're all fast food frameworks, right? Like that mindset of write your own code, dang it. And he did make this point where he said, this interview about accessibility is a must listen for every web developer. And the whole episode is a series of best practices with value bombs dropping everywhere.
It's a good line. Value bombs.
And also to emphasize the point that if you do things right from the beginning, you will suffer less.
Mm.
And I appreciate he said less, because not none, right? You're just going to suffer less. And you know you should do that, but it's often quite tough to implement. I think the frustrating part of here is getting started on the right path takes longer, and you really, really, really want to write code. So you tend to take shortcuts at the beginning and then actually get further away from your goal. So it does take time to get good at this stuff, but it's worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And it's great to evaluate some existing websites out there and start just seeing how they act in the accessibility problems. And he brings up the point that, you know, go take a look at Amazon.com, because it's a very accessible site when you put constraints around it.
Yeah.
And it can help you learn. And Chris, you've got your collection of .NET Rocks mugs. I'm sure you've already got a copy of Music to Code By, but I'd send you another if you really wanted one. Not that that makes any sense.
Mm.
It's digital assets. But thank you so much for your comment. And if you'd like a copy of Music to Code By, write a comment on the website at .NETRocks.com or on the Facebooks. We publish every show there as well. And if you comment on the show and I read it, we'll send you a copy of Music to Code By.
And definitely follow us on Twitter. I'm at Carl Franklin. He's at Rich Campbell. Send us a tweet and write it yourself. You don't need a framework.
No tweet framework, please. No tweet deck.
You don't need any of that. Just write us a tweet.
I know, you know, not that I do this on tweets, but I know how much I write between the book and the abstracts and so forth. Grammarly is my friend.
Grammarly is awesome.
Grammarly catches stuff for me on a regular basis. There's no two ways about it.
Although it has ingrained itself and embedded itself as a kind of a virus in my browser, and I don't know really how to get rid of it without subscribing to it. I guess I will.
I pay for Grammarly happily, just as and I'll tell you the main reason, not the, you know, no sponsorship or anything, but it's the weekly email where it tells me how awesome I am.
Huh.
Where it tells me how many words I've written that week.
Really?
It tells me how many different words I used that week and how many corrections I needed to make.
You've convinced me, Rabbit. I'm going to get a Grammarly because I need to be told how awesome I am once in a while.
That's it.
Okay.
We should go to work. You want to go to work?
Yeah, let's go to work.
All right.
Courtney Heitman is an accessibility program manager for Gallup in Omaha, Nebraska. Over the last 10 plus years, Courtney has done everything from design and full stack development to user testing and project management. Her passion is creating a web that is usable and accessible to all. When she's not playing with new tech, you can find her working on new recipes in her kitchen or working on her farm. Wow. Mm. If you have a farm, how do you even have time to play with tech, create recipes or user testing and all that stuff?
It's really all just, you know, project managementing of my life. You have to, you know, you have Kanban boards for everything. Like, that's my running joke. Like, if you give a project manager a project, you'll get a Kanban board.
Yeah,
so like, I have like, I don't know, 10 different Trello boards for like every aspect of my life. Like,
tell me there's a chicken Trello board. I love everything about that.
Well, you know, I can imagine you know, how that would get old really quick. Like milk cows again, milk cows again, milk cows again. Yes, completed, completed. Wow.
Yep.
Wow, that's fun. It's quite a life you've got there, and I'm a little bit jealous because, you know, everybody dreams of having a farm, right?
Correct.
Self-sufficiency, eggs in the morning, fresh milk, fresh cream, you know, maybe some animals and stuff, but man, that's hard work.
It's hard work. I am lucky enough. So the room that I'm talking to you all from is actually my childhood bedroom. My parents moved across the road to my grandpa's house when he passed away a few years ago. And so I bought my house. And so I live in my childhood house. And
so you're literally living in the house you grew up in, but now yep. You own it. I love that. That's awesome.
Yep.
That's a very fun. New England thing too, Carl. Like your brother's in the house that you grew up in. Like,
yeah, that's true. Well, it's also just necessity, right? I mean,
yeah,
he didn't want to leave, but the house was available because my mother was living in her mom's house. Right. Passed on, and that house, he was living in it anyway. So
yeah, it all makes sense. Yeah. I would point out that the best way to enjoy a farm is to have a family member owns a farm, because that's how I do it. I get to visit the family dairy farm on a regular basis and just admire it. And then I get to go home.
It's like being a grandparent. Yes. You know,
that's it.
You hand the kids back and then you go home. Back.
We raised cows when I was in school, like high school, elementary and high school. And let me tell you, even raising beef cattle that you don't have to milk every day, you still never get a vacation because the cows will know that you have left and they will escape.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
They will wreak havoc.
Yep.
All right. So I'm going to tackle the first line of the title that Richard came up with here, vision impairment. And is vision impairment fixable by getting better glasses or?
It can be.
I mean, what do you do on your website for vision impairment besides raise the font?
So there's several different ways that you can make websites accessible to people with different visual disabilities. There's a wide range of vision disabilities, too. You have everything from, as all three of us are wearing glasses, our kinds of vision impairments, to color blindness, to people with very low vision to actual blindness and everything in between. You can also have people who have diabetic retinopathy, and so they see different spots on the screen just because of how their eyes work. There's all sorts of vision simulators. Chrome has several plugins that simulate different types of visual illnesses and like vision impairments.
Hmm. Oh, I love that.
And I really recommend people like download one and just kind of like look at them, because you can see people that have like partial retina detachments and like how they see the web.
Just to be able to see what they see.
Yeah. It's a good lesson in empathy and like why.
Is this a tool called Chrome Lens?
Yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah. There was one, and I don't think it's in the Chrome extension store anymore, that was called No Coffee. That was really good. I think it's still on Firefox, though.
Okay.
And I've used that one quite a bit. Hmm. There's a program called Color Oracle that you download on your computer that simulates color blindness. And they have three different types on there, although there's more than just the three. But it changes your whole monitor. So if you're not colorblind, you can just change like the whole thing. You can't like actually like do things, but it'll change your whole screen so you can see exactly how it would look. And like that's really powerful when you're looking at different graphs are a big one where you have a bunch of different colors.
Yeah,
and
that's where green and red show up, right?
Yep.
Because they don't occur naturally on websites. I don't see green and red on regular websites, but graphs.
Yeah. Like, you'll see some, like, brand colors might be a green or a red, but, like, very rarely are they used together unless it's in some form of data viz. And so, actually showing those and, like, people actually being able to see what it looks like, it's powerful. I've spent the last 3 years working on creating new data viz colors for my company because we're obviously a data and analytics company. Most people know Gallup for Gallup polling. And we do a lot of data viz, and we've spent a ton of time researching colors and like looking at them and like tweaking them and doing user testing with people who are colorblind or have mm-hmm. other vision impairments, and just kind of going through the whole gamut of testing and trying to make everything as accessible as we can.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for better or worse, these are the kind of tools where I love the empathy effect, that I fire this up and suddenly I can empathize with someone who's trying to use my software with it. But then the QA person in me, you know, that angry guy, yep. wants to automate that. To yep. say, do we pass? And that's a much subtler thing. Like, how would you know this site looks is easy to understand for someone with a colorblindness?
AI, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think there is an easy answer to that yet.
Right.
There is. So DQ, which is DEQUE, is an accessibility consultancy company, and they have Axe Core, which is their like main unit testing software that you can write against. It's open source. They also have an Axe extension if you are someone who doesn't want to write unit tests and you want to go through and use an actual like UI and test things. And they do have a lot of things that you can check. I think last I heard, it was like close to 60% of accessibility that they can just like scan and make sure that like by using semantic HTML and like checking the hex codes against each other, that you're getting color contrast ratios right and all of that.
Right.
But I haven't seen one that deals with like true color blindness yet. But yeah.
But I mean, in one sense, it's just like, look at the palette and know if you got a red-green problem, this palette's going to have a problem. Like, and of course, there's different colorblindness, just make it even harder. So that, correct. I mean, that's one attack to it. But I appreciate that some of this has just got to be functional testing and running it with the different filters on.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you went to colorblindness just because, you know, Carl's initial thought was just scale the fonts up. So for someone with sight issues where size matters, that's one thing. We're both, I know Carl's the same age as I am, so we're both 55. And boy, oh boy, my fonts are getting bigger.
Oh man, I still remember that day that we were somewhere, I can't remember what country we're in, but you had to pull up an Azure VM on a really high retina, whatever it was, display, a really high resolution display on your laptop. And you were leaning forward and squinting and pulling your...
Lifting your glasses.
And I was like, so this is what we've come to, old man.
This is where we are.
This is where we are.
That's the cool thing about accessibility and inclusive design is a philosophy that everyone is going to be disabled, whether that's situational, temporary, or permanently.
Totally.
Like, we're all going to be disabled in our lifetimes. We're all going to have vision and hearing problems as we age. Like, it's just a fact of life. And so helping people who have disabilities helps everyone.
Yeah, I totally agree. Can we talk a little bit about screen readers? Just I've known back in the green screen days, because I'm that old, I knew a developer who was completely blind and used a Braille screen reader on a green screen to code.
Yep.
And Thomas, I haven't talked to you in a decade or more. That was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life. Like he was, and the speed that he read Braille at was staggering. And the best one-handed typist I'd ever seen, because he'd have one hand in the reader, feeling the bumps, and the other hand on the keyboard. And he's scanning and typing, and it's just, like, amazing.
Yeah.
It's really cool. And, like, I think a lot of people, like, the general population, even, like, the general tech population, don't realize how fast people either listen or read to, like, read a screen reader or a Braille reader.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're so used to it. And so most screen reader users who are blind and use it like for permanently, like they listen at like 2x, 3x, 4x speed, like you would a podcast. So it's just going blah, 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 really fast.
Yeah.
And like they know exactly the keywords to listen to. I use a screen reader on a weekly basis, testing things, if not daily, and I still can't listen as fast as most of them do.
See, like, you're kind of an impaired screen reader user. I like that.
Yep.
So what do modern screen readers even look like? Like, what are they doing? Because we don't have 80 by 25 on our screens anymore.
Correct. So there's three main modern screen readers that people use. WebAIM does a survey about every year and a half to 2 years, and they survey everyone who uses screen readers. Mm-hmm. And they kind of figure out who, like, what the top screen readers are, because screen readers are still very much in the, like, browser wars era of the internet.
Oh, man. I mean, that's, like, good and bad, right? Like, right. It means that it's technology's evolving, but there's no definitive answers to anything.
Yep. And the screen readers, JAWS, NVDA, and VoiceOver are the big three. And then TalkBack on Android. So, like, your big three on computers, like, they all operate differently. Like, none of the keyboard strokes are the same for the most part. Like, some of them are, but a lot of them operate, like, to read the next paragraph on VoiceOver, it's the VoiceOver keys and then A. Mm. And on JAWS, it's just the down arrow on the keyboard. So they're, like, completely different. And so if you're bouncing between them as a developer, it can be really hard to, like, figure that out.
And these are all voiced screen readers, are they?
Right? Yep, all voiced screen readers.
Okay.
Yep.
And do they leverage focus to make them work? Like, how do they know what to read?
So they use semantic HTML, like what HTML we put on the page and ARIA roles to know what to read. So they can tell, you can navigate the web on a screen reader via links. You can navigate via headings. You can navigate and just, like, actually read the page.
Oh, interesting.
A lot of screen reader users go through and navigate, and they'll either read just the links on a page first, kind of like us with vision would go through and just kind of, like, scan the page to see what's on the page. They might choose to go through all the headings, like all the H tags that are on a page, to kind of scan it to see what's even on that page.
Right.
Mm. And they might do the same thing with links before they even go through and read, like, the paragraph text that's on a page.
And so then now we get into this whole semantic side of building your pages so that screen readers have a chance. And you just said there's an arms race, which means different readers approach this different ways. I was just complaining about messed up RSS. It sounds like we got the same problem.
Kind of. It's still very much, it's like back when IE8 was a thing, and, like, you couldn't use certain CSS and JavaScript things because IE8 was like, no,
we know CSS like better. the real sin was IE6. I mean, IE6 shipped before CSS1 was ratified. It was literally its own version of CSS. Nothing else.
Yes.
That, and then it was popular because it was the default browser for XP. So. Yep. Because what was your alternative? Windows 2000? Because you weren't going to use Vista.
No. Did anyone use Vista? No. I guess willingly use Vista.
No. Oh, man, that's so long ago and just painful memories.
Painful.
You know, it's really great during the Vista era. Start an IT podcast. Ask me how I know.
Well, you're not a loss for content, that's for sure.
No.
How do I get around this?
Look at those early shows. We did not talk about Vista very much back then because nobody wanted to. We were all sad.
Right. Well, you talked about why not to use Vista anyway.
Now, what about all the built-in stuff in Windows? Like, do you need these things when there's so much accessibility features in Windows?
Microsoft does so much work to put accessibility in Windows. They have their own version of a screen reader called Narrator, and it's kind of picking up use. JAWS is still the top screen reader.
Right.
And JAWS, if anyone has ever purchased a license of JAWS, is expensive. It's like over $1,000 a year.
Holy man.
Wow.
A year?
A year.
So it's, I mean, you were talking about screen reader as a service?
Pretty much.
Okay. And then as opposed to, hey, Windows Narrator is built in.
Yeah. Narrator's built in. NVDA is free and open source. Like, people can go and, like, update NVDA software on GitHub. I never have. I know people that have filed bugs and stuff on GitHub when they find things. And people will go update things. NVDA is for... The last WebAIM survey, which was about 2.5 years ago now, maybe closer to 3, they were neck and neck. Like, it was literally like when Chrome and Firefox were like at both at 50% use or like 45% use, and everyone was like, what's going to happen? And JAWS has kind of edged back up in the last survey that WebAIM did, but it's NVDA still gets quite a bit of use, and it's open source.
And this is the NV Access Organization, which is a charity.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. You think they'd be the winners just because these are folks who are literally their mission through and through is to help the visually impaired be empowered.
Yep.
For better or worse, I guess JAWS had a better marketing budget. Presumably they had a good product too. I don't know.
Yes. I think that's the main reason why JAWS has stayed around as long as it has, is it does have a good product. Like, they were the market leader for years upon years upon years.
Years and years, yeah. And they have continued to improve it using the money they're collecting. They're doing something with it. Martin Vandering in the chat for our Bullhorn stream was asked the question, does it matter if the screen reader voices are more natural? Because I know the Windows narrator voice, not that natural. Like, you very much know it's a synthetic voice.
So I work on a Mac primarily, so I use VoiceOver. And I know on JAWS, you can actually change the voice of the screen reader. So you can have it have different accents. We have an internal auditor at my company that I work with quite frequently. And he has his set to an Irish accent at the moment.
Oh, great.
Just to like switch it up and like have something fun. And occasionally he'll go through and change it, and it'll all of a sudden be like an American accent or a British accent or an Australian accent or whatever. And so you can make them sound more natural. Most people who use screen readers to like you look at different things on the internet, theirs are so sped up that you don't even really notice.
Right. I was going to say, it might just get in the way, you know, because the most important thing is understanding what the heck they're saying.
And being fast.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So, I mean, in theory, there's certain accents that are clearer.
Yep.
I always defer to the Canadian accent. It's clearly the superior one. But
and the most modest.
Yes, that too. But speed is of the essence. So it's what are the sounds that you can pick up clearly when you're running at this crazy rate that they want to run at to be efficient?
Yeah, it's interesting. And like, a lot of people, if you've never listened to a screen reader or like messed around with one and actually like heard a vocal one, I always have people turn on the one on your phone. Both Android and iOS have one built in.
Right.
You can just turn it on, and most of the gestures are just tapping on the screen with like a different finger combination. So it's not super hard for most people to pick up and like actually listen to what a web page sounds like.
Right. Mm.
Whereas if you're using it on a computer and you've like never used a screen reader before, you normally have to download software unless you're on a Mac, because VoiceOver is built in on Macs.
Right.
And then you have to go set it up, and then you have to learn special keyboard configurations of like how you're going to do things. And like, that's a really steep learning curve for most people.
Sure. Especially, and then throw in, and you're vision impaired. So all these requests you're making are challenging to figure out in the first place.
Yeah.
Yep.
And folks, I need to interrupt for one moment for this very important message.
Do you spend too much effort on handling content in your project? Stop solving boring tasks and get back to the code. Content.ai is the modular content platform that enables marketers and developers to plan, create, and deliver experiences that look and feel great on any channel, not just websites. But if a website is your main channel, you can leverage the CDN-backed content delivery with .NET Core SDKs, .NET Model Generator, and Fluent API, which makes it easy to filter and order content. What makes Content.ai truly unique is the ease of doing business with. With hubs in New York, London, Amsterdam, Brno, and Sydney, Content.ai's globally distributed team ensures the success of leading companies like Zurich Insurance, Algolia, and Oxford University. See more at content.ai/developers. That's content.ai/developers. Or visit them at Live 360 Conference in Orlando or Dev Intersection in Las Vegas.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we're back. It's .NET Rocks. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Carl Franklin.
Hey, hey.
And we're talking to Courtney Heitman about vision impairment, screen readers, and accessibility as a whole. But of course, obviously focused on the vision side of things because there are other impairments.
Mm. Yep.
I've certainly, you know, there's a whole world of custom controllers and for various mobility challenges for hearing impairment as well. Mm. But I'm happy to stay on the vision side just because it's complicated. It's not one thing.
Correct. That's very true.
I have dug around a little on YouTube and watching someone who is an expert with a screen reader just to see what it looks, because it's so detached from what you're used to. The speed that they're listening, the way they approach things, how quickly they stop something, like all of the stuff you would normally do when you're scanning a paragraph and then move on without finishing reading it. Because you don't need to. You've got what you want and you moved on. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I noticed is that, you know, no sentences are being finished. They get the gist, they move on.
Yep. And we call it a hush key, my different teams at work. Mm-hmm. Every screen reader has a hush key where you can just press it and it'll like stop reading whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's also one of the first keys that when you start using a screen reader to like test your website that you should learn. Because all of a sudden your screen reader is just going to start going and like reading and you're going to be trying to figure out how to use it. And so you're listening to it and trying to think and like, it's kind of complicated and overwhelming. So look up what the hush key is.
Okay. Yeah. You'll want that one right away. You need to stop. You're freaking me out. But I also think because you're not vision impaired, you keep trying to use your eyes.
Yep. I frequently have people shut off their monitor when they're using a screen reader. So that way they can get like the full experience. Like your computer's still on.
Great idea.
Either if you're on a laptop, put a piece of paper over your screen or shut your monitor off if you're on an external monitor. So that way you can actually see if you're getting the info that like you need to be getting, or if like you're getting placed in a weird spot on the page and it doesn't make sense. Mm. And like, maybe you need to move instructions. Like maybe your password requirement isn't above where the password field is. So you don't know that you have to input a special character and an uppercase character and all of that. And so like, maybe you need to put it above there. Mm-hmm. So that way someone can read it and know when they're using a screen reader exactly where it needs to go.
A path where typically as developers, we make mistakes because you're never logging in for the first time.
Correct.
And so to create that barrier of entry for someone, it's like they can't log in because you did not tag up the information for the passwords well enough to just get past that hurdle.
Mm. Yeah. So I can imagine it might take some getting used to shut off your monitor and use a screen reader, especially at a fast speed, you know.
Yes.
So do you have any guidelines for like start out at a regular speed and then slowly increase it until you can understand it? I mean, I can imagine that could take a long time.
I almost never actually make my screen reader read faster than 1x speed just because I don't use mine enough to actually get used to the high speed talking. And most of the time, I'm just like spot checking pages. I'm not using it as a like to surf the internet, basically, right?
Yeah.
And so I keep mine kind of at a 1x because I want to make sure that it's reading all the things that it's doing. I want to make sure if I'm on an accordion menu that it's saying that it's expanded when it is expanded or it's collapsed when it's collapsed.
Yeah.
So that way I actually know all of that. And if it's reading too fast, I personally cannot pick up on it.
It's anxiety inducing.
Mm. It is. And I always, when we, all of our developers at my company go through accessibility training in their first quarter when they start. And I always tell them, I'm like, if you have never done anything with accessibility, like, do not start with a screen reader. Like, you are going to be in over your head. Like, we want you to start small and, like, work your way up. Like, let's start with some automated testing. Let's start with, like, keyboard testing. Right. And then work your way up. Because using a screen reader is, it's different for most of us because it's not something we use. And so you have to think about the web differently, and you have to, like, just completely flip your mindset of how you do things on the internet. Mm. And, like, that's a big learning curve for a lot of people.
Sure. I like the idea of starting with something like color blindness, just because it's fascinating. It's instant, just looking at the test, it's like instantly empathy generating. It's like that button vanished.
Mm. Yep.
Right. Gone. It was just the wrong color. And now that they'll never find it.
Yep.
That's interesting. And it may be a little less intimidating. It seems like screen reader is like the level 10 of 10.
Yes.
Like you work your way up. Some of the semantic stuff, some of the macular challenges, like being able to zoom and so forth, like all of those different pieces. And then, okay, you've graduated now. Let's go do the scary thing.
Yep. And that's mostly what I tell people. Like it, even running automated tests, like they're looking to make sure that your HTML is semantic and that you're using all the correct things that you're doing. So in theory, they're catching a lot of the issues that a screen reader user is going to find anyway. And so like you're helping, and we're like, we need to start you easy. So you don't like all of a sudden use a screen reader and you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And like, this is confusing and I don't like this, because we want to make the web better for everyone. So we're like, okay, if we start small and like add a little bit and a little bit and a little bit and a little bit, and you just keep working your way up on the difficulty level, you can make some really accessible websites and learn a lot along the way.
I'm going to synthesize a few other comments here from the Bullhorn stream, from our live viewers here. Dave Aykroyd talking about how whether or not newer computers are better set up for accessibility, which I think is generally true. But he also talks about, he also mentioned multi-monitor machines.
Yeah.
Because I think for as developers, we're often dealing with multiple monitors, which kind of handy for us in doing development. But how do screen readers cope with that? Mm.
They read whatever your active window is.
Right.
So
you have to have enough vision to click the mouse on a particular window or Alt-Tab.
Or tab through.
And know that it's selected.
They use it. Most screen reader users use a keyboard, but they like know, like you have to know how to navigate through your browser. And my least favorite thing when I'm like spot checking a page, the Outlook and Teams notifications will read when they come through, because as sighted users, like we read them as they come through when we're looking at pages and they pop up in our upper right corner, right?
Right.
But on the other hand, if you have windows stacked on top of each other, like what do you care? You're not looking at them anyway.
Yes.
You're listening to them. You just tab through them. So why would you bother with multiple screens? Unless they're different zoom levels, because you've got, you're partially sighted, and so having a heavily zoomed screen helps.
Yep. And there are people who do that. And there are screen reader users that aren't, maybe don't have vision disabilities. Maybe they have ADHD or dyslexia and they use a screen reader for that.
Because they comprehend better spoken than they do trying to read. Yeah. You're dyslexic and things like that, where the written word is very challenging.
Yeah.
I've seen this also sync version of that, where they're highlighting words and saying them, because if you poke both sides of the brain, it's easier to comprehend.
Mm.
Yes. I've seen that quite a bit, especially on transcripts. You'll see a lot of transcripting software that highlights reads in sync while you're listening to the podcast or the video or whatever.
It is fascinating what it does to the brain to have both the written word, spoken word synced, because it literally is different parts of the brain. It seems to help with retention.
And you would think that it'd be cognitive dissonance, but it's not, because they're both the same symbols in the brain, aren't they? Whereas if you have a picture of a duck and then some text that says, hey, you know, this is an interesting picture of a duck, but it's not really a duck. Maybe it's a, you know, whatever. Yeah, very hard to read and observe something different at the same time.
It is important to do that stuff well, to sync those things together. But now we're talking about different classes of disabilities, where it's like, how do I help someone comprehend all of this stuff?
That's the big one. And one of the things that WCAG, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, have like openly admitted that WCAG 2.0 didn't do a great job of helping people with cognitive disabilities. Like, there aren't really rules around that. Mm. And that's what a lot of the different laws around the world are based on WCAG. Like, WCAG is the standard that most people strive to be legally compliant in different countries around the world. And like, they're getting better. And like, the focus for WCAG 3.0, which is still years away from being implemented, is mm-hmm. to help put different cognitive disabilities more in the forefront as we're working on all of the other things. And cognitive disabilities are really hard to develop around because they are so personal compared, like from person to person.
I mean, I'm excited that they're taking that on, but it also makes us realize like they're just taking that on.
Mm. Yeah.
The current draft for WCAG is 2.2, and they've seemed to have a pretty tight timeline around where they're going to get with that. Mm. But 3 seems like a big leap.
It's going to be a big leap. They have a couple different success criteria that they've released as drafts and like asked for public comment on, but it's going to take years. Like, I'm guessing probably 5 to 10, just like personal opinion.
That's something. But also it's like, the folks that need it most are ones that are going to have a tough time contributing to it too. Like, this is going to be advocacy driven, which has its own set of problems.
It's very true. It does.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. And I appreciate that we're there, that we're now talking about these physical impairments. We're getting a handle on how to deal with that. And the web has improved enough, and the process of maturing the web has improved enough that we can do that.
Yeah.
So now we're going to talk a way harder problem that certainly needs to be done, but is not going to be an easy thing to pull off. I've grabbed a lot of links so far, so as requested by the chat room. But every time you mention something, Courtney, I go find it and add it to it, because these are all things I want to play with now. This is really cool. I don't know if I'm going to pay for JAWS, though. That's a lot of money for a screen reader. Holy man.
Start out with NVDA. That's what I recommend. People who use Windows computers, start out with NVDA. If you have never used a screen reader before and you want I will actually pull mine off the wall because I still use mine. DQ has these nice little one pagers. This one's for VoiceOver that tells you exactly what commands you need to do what.
Right.
You can find them on DQ University. And they're free. You can print them off. Obviously, I have mine printed and hung up on the wall on my wall next to my desk. Because I use it. Like, occasionally I'll be like, I don't remember what the command is for this thing. What is that?
But you're also working across more than one. And I've included a link. They're the folks who make the AXE testing tools.
Yep.
So they all those docs are there as well.
Yeah. DQ has great learning resources. All three of the big accessibility consultancy companies, so DQ, TPGI, and Level Access, do different webinars on accessibility. So you can sign up on their websites and go through them. WebAIM is also a big company that does a bunch of different webinars. They actually just had a conference this past week.
Oh, wow.
With a bunch of different things. And then if you're like into audio accessibility, 3Play Media also does a ton of webinars about transcriptioning and captioning and audio descriptions. Audio descriptions are a fun one that most people haven't really heard about, which I'm happy to talk about. It's how people with low to no vision watch things on Netflix or movies. They 3Play actually has a really good video where they describe, it's a scene from Frozen. Sven the reindeer is playing with Olaf the elephant, and they describe exactly what is happening on screen, and you can hear it along with the dialogue. So it's what someone with low to no vision would hear, like, as they're enjoying popular culture media. Wow. Right.
Cool.
Is that like two simultaneous audio inputs, a description of the scene and then the sounds of the scene?
They have a player that 3Play makes that it pauses the actual like movie while it's talking through the like background of like Sven is doing like this and jumping around and like whatever is happening on the screen, and then it'll restart playing the actual video. So you'll hear the dialogue between them, and then it'll pause to describe more, and then I'll start playing the video. It's really cool.
And captioning, did automated captioning has gotten dramatically better. I mean,
dramatically better. Yeah. It is still not great. You will still hear people with audio disabilities call it craptions.
Right.
But it has gotten significantly better. It's gotten to the point where even like if you're scrolling on TikTok and people are using their automated captions, they're close to like 95% accurate now.
Right.
And like it's super helpful. And I always tell people, like, if you want to help people with disabilities and you see a different company like TikTok who starts using automated captioning, TikTok keeps trying to like turn theirs off and be like, well, but like people aren't using it. I have mine turned on. Like I'm not someone who normally reads captions like and needs to read captions, but I keep it on. So it helps with usage statistics to show companies like, yeah, people do want this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I know. Very powerful. The audio description stuff's got to be more challenging to create like that.
Definitely.
That's got to be an art form to succinctly describe a scene.
It is. And there are several. I know Netflix has audio description shows that you can find. I think HBO has some, too. Mm-hmm. And like they're getting better. And they're becoming more and more shows that have audio descriptions. If anyone wants to check them out. You can definitely, I'm pretty sure you can like Google audio description shows and you'll probably get a list of several of them.
Last time we talked about, maybe not the last time, but certainly before when we talked about accessibility and screen readers in particular, there were some special markup tags that you could put in your HTML that makes screen readers, that makes it easy for them. Is that still a thing, or are screen readers just hip enough to parse the content?
So ARIA roles, ARIA is actually an acronym. It stands for Accessible Rich Internet Application, I believe. You'll see a lot of them, and it's the easiest way. Let's say you're developing something in React and like you need to make a span tag a button.
Yeah.
Because that happens, especially in JavaScript frameworks. Right. They tend to be the ones that cause that to happen. You can mark it up using ARIA to make sure that it's doing exactly what it needs to be doing and what it's reading to screen readers.
Cool.
I personally use a website called Ally Support, A11Y support.io. I would consider it the can I use of screen readers. So it allows you to see what screen readers have implemented what in different ARIA roles. And it is an open source application. I actually know the guy who built the website originally. He and I co-run the Nebraska Digital Accessibility Meetup.
Wow.
I use it like honestly probably daily to double check things for different developers. When things are just like acting weird and you're like, is this like actually acting weird? Like, is it a code problem or is it a screen reader problem? And it's a really good gut check. So
very cool.
Yeah. No. And fascinating just to go through that and to just provide, this is not complicated. This is just a few extra tags here and there, right? Saying, yep. Hey, this role is navigation and, you know, that kind of thing. This is content info and
yep.
Just to help point the way. And those tags behave consistently between the different readers?
They do for the most part. There are some that have not been implemented correctly or completely across all the different screen readers.
Right.
It just depends. But for the most part, they act the same for the most part.
So. Awesome. Well, Courtney, yeah. I got a huge list of links here. This is lots to think about.
Ginormous. And
yeah, back. Back to the challenge of it's worth putting some, you know, I'm going to go back to Chris Love's comment. Work on this up front, play with some things, then go dig and do a new site and see if you can't do it better.
Great stuff.
It's so much easier to do accessibility from the beginning. There's a running joke in the accessibility advocacy space of, do you want to build a website once or twice? Because if you're trying to make it accessible, if you do it from the beginning, you're probably only going to build it once.
Somebody should have told me that in 2002.
Yeah.
I think I built that website 5 times now for different reasons.
At least 5 times, but it's also been 20 years.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, one last question, Courtney, before we wrap up. Martin in the chat was asking, what do you think of e-ink screens? Are they more accessible, less accessible than your typical LCD?
I think some low vision people use and prefer e-ink screens. Mm-hmm. I actually think e-ink screens, like as someone with mostly full sight minus my, farsightedness, I think that they're more accessible when you're like outside in the sun because you don't have that screen glare.
We're talking about Kindle and Remarkable and those things. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
And so like they're really nice for that. And if you were someone who maybe suffered from migraines and was in an office that was highly lit, I could see an e-ink screen being really great for that because you wouldn't have that screen glare that's like furthering your migraine and like all of that.
Yeah. I also say like get the newer monitors with the LED backlights, not the fluorescent backlights. Like the fact once you have spectrally adjustable backlight, life is better.
Well, you can use flux or you can use night light to adjust that as well. The blue light is the worst.
But only if you have a new only if you have a new monitor, right? So I'm talking to folks who struggle with this stuff. It's like, well, how old's your monitor? Because you change your computer, but you keep using the screen because it still works. And it's like, dude, go buy a new monitor. You'll never go back.
I used Flux on those, for years and years on those big Dell monitors that I had at the studio. Yeah. So you're saying if your monitor is like 15 years old, it won't work.
Well, and I find folks like that. Right. Remember that old, I had that old DVI-D high-res screen, 2560 by 1600.
I still have them.
But yeah, they have limits.
Yeah.
So, but then you go sit in front of a new monitor and you're like, okay.
It's amazing how much monitor technology has changed in even the last like 5 years.
Yeah. And it's like, you use it every day for crying out loud. Like, you'll get a new tech.
Well, Courtney Heitman, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you this show. And
it's been a pleasure talking to you guys.
Come back and talk to us anytime, will you?
Will do.
All right. And we'll see you next time on .NET Rocks.
.NET Rocks is brought to you by Franklin's Net and produced by Plop Studios, a full-service audio, video, and post-production facility located physically in New London, Connecticut, and of course in the cloud. Online at pwop.com. Visit our website at dotnetrocks.com for RSS feeds, downloads, mobile apps, comments, and access to the full archives going back to show number 1. Recorded in September 2002. And make sure you check out our sponsors. They keep us in business. Now go write some code. See you next time. Got transmitter bands by the FCC. Yes, I'm a toy boy. Life is hard. Pay my taxes with my credit card.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.